This also will be nice.
I think it's best to say evening. Not afternoon.
Not anymore.
And like you said, we're all close.
Yeah.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming out, and welcome. Just a few housekeeping rules for those of you that are in Social 1000, Contemporary Social Issues. There's a cute little pink chart going around with a sign-in sheet for you to sign your name and check off with your professor so that you can get credit for that. And I think everyone else is here with their respective professors in regards to attendance. But welcome tonight. Welcome to the horrors of child abuse and hearing real life stories of our special guest that has come and traveled to be with us on this evening. And I'm going to be introducing her today and letting her take the floor for you. Those in the back may have to come down a little bit if you can't hear Ms. Levine because the microphone is not obviously operating or working. But to begin, Mrs. Carol Levine is a survivor, author, and advocate who knows all too well about the horrors of child abuse, domestic violence, and the negative effects it has on the lives of children. Her mission in life is to help educate people as to just how bad the epidemic of child abuse is and the impact that this has on society. Ms. Levine speaks about physical abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect. If left untreated, she states that it can impede the progress and growth of a child, and it can also alter the child to its core of their being. Ms. Levine suffered from all of the abuses mentioned, which has caused PTSD, but with help, she has healed over the years. Not only has Ms. Levine healed, but she has dedicated her life to finding a way to bring awareness about child abuse through her personal stories. Her courage, her inspiration, her light, and her spirit speak millions of words on behalf of so many people that are left to suffer in silence. So I would really appreciate if you put your hands together and help me welcome the courageous, the beautiful,
then you develop all kinds of things, like post-traumatic stress disorder, okay? I turned to alcohol, drugs. I was on the streets. There isn't anything I haven't done. not totally proud of myself, but I love myself because I am a survivor. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, when I was a little girl, I lived in a home where there was so much abuse that I used to watch the blood fly. My father used to punch my mother in the mouth. I remember one night when her teeth came flying out. And there was blood all over the place. They didn't know I was watching. I'm the type of kid and a grown-up, having changed this way, where they thought I was upstairs. I'm Snoopy. I want to know what's going on. My brother, who was much older than me, on the other hand, he would hide under the covers. And he didn't want any part. And I couldn't blame him, because my father was a maniac. No one deserves to get beaten, okay? And the thing of this whole thing is I watched it night after night after night. One night, my father said to my mother that he was going to kill her. Now I was only 5 years old. I didn't know what kill meant exactly. So I ran upstairs to my brother, and I said to him, what does that mean? Kill, what does that mean? And there was a fly flying around the room. He went, he says, that's kill. So I knew that my mother was really in trouble now, because my mother wasn't going to move after she got killed. So I went running downstairs, and the hallway was like this, and the kitchen was off to the side. So I came down the stairwell, and I said, no, Daddy, no! And he spun around, and he had this maniacal look on his face, craziness. And quite frankly, I froze in fear. I was only 5 years old. Well, what could I do? But I did say, no, Daddy, no. He was going to hit her with a frying pan that was so heavy that if he had smashed her in the head, you know those black skillet ones? Yeah. It would have killed her. I didn't play with that pan because it was too heavy. So I knew the weight of the pan. So anyway, he came walking down towards where I was standing. And I was so frightened. I was standing there. I was frozen with fear. That's what frozen with fear means, is being like that. So he pushed me as hard as he could up against the stairwell, and my back, I remember my back, I remember every bone in my back feeling like it was, I suppose, going to break as I fell. I didn't know it was going to break, I was only 5 years old. But I was in pain, let's put it that way. And I thought to myself, is he going to kill me? Is he going to kill me? And I was looking in the kitchen like this is my mother, around his body. My father was over 6 feet tall, anyway, 240 pounds. My mother, if she was lucky, weighed 95 pounds. She couldn't eat. When you are being abused like that, many times you lose your appetite. Because all you can think about is the abuse that you're going to go through that night. Okay? Simple as that. So she was a skinny little woman, and we never bonded. She never held me. She never spoke to me. I was a mistake. Simple as that. So, don't get too gooey over this. Now, my mother was down in the bottom of the floor there in the kitchen, and she was looking at me, and I was looking at her, and all of a sudden my father let go of me, and I just fell like a rag doll to the floor. He went to the front door, and in those days, front doors were heavy and they had that panel glass in it. He slammed that door so hard, that the glass just went flying everywhere, all over the floor. He was a monster. I went into the kitchen and my mother was trying to get up. And she was already full of blood because he already beat her, but not the pan, or she'd be dead. So, she said to me, my brave little girl, I want to show you something. So she took me over to the phone, which was also in the hallway, on a little table. And the phones looked a lot different back then. And she said, I'm going to teach you how to use the phone. And then when Daddy, if he does that to me again, You use this phone, you dial zero, okay? And you say, police, police. And I knew where I lived. She taught me where I lived. So then that became my job. A job like that for a five-year-old is not good for a five-year-old. So I said, Mommy, what will it do? It'll put him in jail. So I went running upstairs and I said to my brother, what's jail? What's jail? And he says, well, that's where all the people go that are bad. They don't come out again, some of them. That's what jail is. And I thought, well, maybe that's not such a bad idea, judging from what I see. I remember everything. I never had any of these repressed memories. I wish that I had repressed memories. Because when you're older, you can maybe deal with it better. One thing with children who don't have repressed memories is I can tap into that part of my brain at any time I want to, and I can see it like it was yesterday. Now, domestic violence is child abuse. Because, you see, I was always worried that my father was going to hit me, and he did hit my brother a few times. And that's another reason why he wasn't going to get involved, because he had me. That's child abuse. But even if neither one of us had gotten hit, and it is domestic violence month, you have to understand that that's child abuse to watch the two people who are supposed to nurture you, to guide you, to help you grow up, to love you, to say I love you. Children need to know that they're loved. My mother never told me from day one that she loved me, ever. I used to go to her at times and say, Mommy, I love you. No answer. Then right before she died, she looks at me and she says, I love you. It meant nothing. Because when I needed to hear that, it was never said. All right. So my mother decided she was going to leave my father. And the family was totally split up. My brother went to my grandparents on my mother's side. They adored him. He does not know what it's like to be cold. He does not know what it's like to eat dog bones because you're hungry. He doesn't know what it's like to be sexually abused. I do. Because I went to an aunt and uncle that I didn't know very well. But when I would see this uncle in the past, I knew I didn't like him. You know, they talk about dogs and kids, they have this like sixth sense or something, and they can like judge if a person's weird or there's something. Well, I was one of those kids, and I knew right from day one I didn't like him. He used to look at me and smirk. This is not the man that I wanted to live with. I was there for about a week in his house, in her house, my aunt and uncle, and all of a sudden, I saw the doorknob go like this, and this man walked in, my uncle. And he climbed right in my bed. And he touched me all over. And he said to me, you're gonna like this when you get bigger. I knew I didn't like it then. Again, I was frozen with fear. I knew it wasn't right. I didn't know what the heck it was, okay? I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand it. I just knew that I was being touched funny, okay, and I didn't like it. So then he got out, and it turned into a ritual. It was almost every day. He'd come in and climb into my bed, he'd have me do things to him, and he told me, if you ever tell anyone, I will kill you. Well, I knew what kill meant, didn't I, by that time. So I kept my mouth shut. My aunt was not feeding me well. I was only allowed to take one bath a week. That was it. My little kids, they get dirty. And so Friday nights, I was allowed to take a bath because my mother might, and I say might, show up on Saturday to see me for about an hour and a half. And when she did do that, she said, what do you want to do? I said, let's go to the diner. Let's go eat. Because I was so hungry. During the week, I was being so underfed that I would go downstairs. I'd hear them both snoring. Their bedroom was across from mine, so I'd hear them both snoring. And I'd sneak downstairs, and they had a dog, a beautiful German Shepherd. So I would take a dog bone for the dog, and I would take one for myself. And they never counted the bottles of Coke either. So I was always instructed never, ever, ever to touch the food. No snacks, I was never allowed, period. So I grabbed a bottle of Coke, and I had a bottle of Coke and a dog bone. Well, it made my stomach not feel so good, but I felt full. So then I would go upstairs and go to bed because I was able to sleep a little bit. But I never slept all the way through because, you see, I had terrible nightmares. And I knew that this was going to be something I had to look forward to for the duration of the time I was going to be there. So I said to my mother one time when she came to visit, how long am I going to be here? She said, don't ask. You're here. I had no desire to tell my mother. We hadn't bonded. We did not bond as mother and daughter. I was a mistake. And I looked like my father. So I had a double whammy there. Okay. So I knew, though, that I was not going to be one of those kids that was never going to tell. I had too big a mouth for that. And I knew that it was wrong, but I didn't know exactly why. So I had an aunt that used to come over to visit. She was a drunk, but she was a funny drunk. And I knew she liked me. Now, this aunt, one day she said to me, Carol, if you have anything you want to say to me or tell me, always know that I'm here for you. So I knew that she would be the person that I would tell when I was ready, or when I thought I should, or when I built up the courage to do this, she would be the person. So on the 4th of July of that year, I thought my mother and I were going to go out. I thought we were going to have such fun and all this other stuff. And she came over to the house and we were having a big party. I came from wealth. People had money in my family. We were not poor. And they would have big parties. They were flower growers. And they did well. In those days, they take the flowers into the city. And then they just, my grandfather rubbed his elbows with movie stars. I mean, this is just how it was. But everyone forgot about myself. Simple as that. I was a child that shouldn't have been. Now, everybody was drunk. A lot of alcoholics in my family. I'm an alcoholic. But I haven't had a drink since 1981. Thank you very much. No way that I would be standing up here without booze in me. Now, I like to sing. Maybe you can tell by my voice. I'm a singer. But I had to drink before I got up to sing when I got older, all right? Because I couldn't navigate. I couldn't do anything unless I had a certain amount of booze in me. Okay. So, on that particular night of July, I did indeed tell my aunt about my uncle. And she told my mother. Now, I was removed from that house, and my mother said to me, why didn't you tell me? Well, I didn't feel like I had a mother. I didn't have a father. And my mother never bonded. So, I was taken out of that house of horrors because my uncle was always saying he was going to kill me. He was always molesting me. And it was just, and I was hungry, and I was dirty, and the kids in school made fun of me. They were no different then than they are today. Kids made fun of you back then, too. Especially if your hair's starting to fall out because you're not having the right nutrients, okay? And then also, too, I was just a mess. My aunt didn't know how to iron, I guess. She didn't care if I went to school in clothing that was all wrinkled and stuff. And I probably had an odor about me. You see, these are the signs of neglect and abuse with children. If you see a kid out on the street who looks like that, that child is coming from abuse. People can be poor, but they can be clean. Now, and then also, too, with children with abuse, I used to have bruises on me. A lot of times, you'll wear clothing that covers your arms and stuff to cover the bruises, even if it's hot out. Okay, so if you see children are not appropriately dressed for the weather, chances are there's a reason for it. Now, I moved to an aunt and uncle, another aunt and uncle. I found out later on my mother had already gotten her divorce by this time. So I was shoved off to another aunt and uncle. But they were nice people. And I started to gain some weight. Okay, thank God. I still made fun of. I was still in the same school. They were just down the road. I ran into my uncle, and he chased me with his vehicle one day. After I got out of that school, I was walking home. He meant business. He wanted to kill me because I opened up my trap. I opened up my mouth. I come from a rough family. Maybe it is. So, all right. Okay. I was going up and down the streets. I didn't know what to do. I'm learning. Everywhere I went, his car was. It was awful. He's laughing at me. So finally I went down to Main Street and went into a drugstore, and I stayed there. I figured, well, now they'll leave me alone because I'm in a drugstore, and then people will see. I was covered with blood. You know why? I ran into a briar patch. And then I also ran into, it's like fencing. Thank you. And I got caught on that too, and my dress was ripped everywhere. I was a mess. So I went into the drugstore like that, and you would think that the adults would look at me and say, hey, there's something going on with this kid. What's going on here? I have blood running down my legs and my dress is all ripped. No one helped me. No one cared. They looked at me like I was a piece of dirt, which is what I felt like. Okay. Now, I stayed there for a while. My mother had remarried, and we moved out to New York. We moved out to Staten Island, went to school there, did not know that I was being stalked. Didn't know it. You see, pedophiles, what they do is they stalk their victims, or they get to know their victims, they learn things about their victims, they have all different ways, which I'm going to go into in a few minutes, about pedophilia, which is a disease of pedophiles. He would go to my school and I'd take the city bus home. So he was following my city bus and he knew where I lived. And he knew that if he, picked me up at one end, he could drop me off at Victory Boulevard at the other end and I'd be able to get home because my stepfather, which my mother had remarried, he had a great big greenhouse place. So we had a lot of property in Staten Island. This man was stalking me. My biological father was going back and forth from California to New Jersey. He didn't know where he wanted to live. All of a sudden, he decided he wanted to exercise his rights for seeing my brother and I. I don't know why. I didn't like us. But my mother couldn't say no, because by law, they do have that right, okay? So I went down to the end of the driveway, and I'm waiting for him. We were going to go to Coney Island. I love Coney Island. Has anyone here ever been to Coney Island? Okay, all right. Coney Island doesn't look the same today. Years ago, it was a nice place to go. But I'm going to tell you what. I had really good times at Coney Island, even when my parents were together. So the thought of going to Coney Island was a really good deal. So he was so late. So I went down to the end of the driveway, and I'm looking left, and I'm looking right, and he's not coming, and then all of a sudden this blue car pulls up. Some guy I don't know. Now you would think that after all the stuff I'd already been through, I would have had more sense about me, but I didn't. This guy pulled up, and he's going like this. Someone got closer to the car. It was in October. It was still warmish. So he had his window down. He's going. And he had a man looking at him. Well, instead of warning, I went to him. What the heck's wrong with this guy? So I got close enough to the car that he was able to pull me in. And away we went. We went around the island. And that guy raked me so bad. And when we were around the island there, he said to me, don't you tell. Don't you tell. And I was struggling really hard to get away from him. He was hurting me. Come on, by that time I was 8 years old. he's hurting me. He's hurting me badly. And so I tried to struggle free from him, and he held me down. My wrists were all bruised and everything. And when he was done, he took me back to the other side of the barbed wire. And he said, "Get out." Now, I was with him long enough to know what he looked like. He had blonde hair and blue eyes. No offense to anybody who had blonde hair and blue eyes. And he was skinny. And I knew what his car said because it said Plymouth on the dashboard. In those days, they put it right on the dashboard. So I knew I was in a Plymouth. And I knew that it was Robin's Egg Blue. Well, I may not have said Robin's Egg Blue, but I knew it was blue. Okay. So I get down. I'm walking down the driveway. I can barely walk. I'm so full of pain. And I had blood dripping all down my legs. And I was a mess. I get down to the house area. My father had shown up. And he said to me, "Where were you, you little jerk? Now look at the way you look. What's going on with you?" So my mother took me aside, and she asked me what happened, and I told her. And in those days, they didn't do anything about it. She should have taken me to the hospital. That's what should have happened. If a child has been raped, you touch nothing on their body, not their clothing, even if they're bloody, nothing. Because DNA is all over that child. You don't touch them. You immediately take them to the hospital. And the hospital is equipped, they should be, to handle situations like this. And they can get the DNA from the rapist. And certainly take care of the child. And get counseling going on. Because the sooner you heal, And the only way you're going to get healed is if you get help. I never got help. I got a bottle of a jar of Vaseline thrown at me. That's what I got. That's some aspirin. Well, this guy, by the time he was caught, because I did get a good description of him in the car and everything, the only thing I didn't have was the plate number. Now, what 8-year-old is going to think about getting the plate number? I was just thinking about getting home. I was so sore and sick and hurt and all this stuff. I was one of 14. And when they caught him, he only got 3 years. That was it. Now I had to go into a courtroom and when they caught him and watch him get sentenced. And let me tell you something. There was a whole bunch of little girls standing around by me, and none of us liked it. None of us wanted to watch this guy. It wasn't closure, okay? Because he was another monster in my life. I already had the father monster, I had the uncle monster, and now I had the other kind of monster. Stranger danger is only 7%. 93% of the time, there's child molestation and rape in the family. Like from brothers, mothers, fathers, or, and this is 93% of the time, or from the coaches, people we entrust our children to, right? We think they're safe. That's where 93% of the abuse is. The 7% is where you're kidnapped and raped like I was. Now, what happened to me was I started to develop panic attacks by the time I was 9 years old. I was almost 9 when I got raped, very close to it. And well, I thought I was going crazy. I didn't know what was wrong with me. All I knew that I couldn't be in front of people like I'm in front of people right now. I would go into meltdown. Now, most people don't like to stand up in front of a classroom and give lectures and stuff. We all go through that. But you see, there's too much of it when you're suffering from panic attacks. You've gone over the line. You panic so badly that you think you're dying. My heart was pounding in my chest. I was sweating, and it was visible. People could see it. And that is humiliation. That's humiliation. I did not want to stay in school. I didn't want to stay in that class when I first started. I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. My panic lasted until I was 52 years old. Now, I did go to a psychologist once, and he said to me, "You're not crazy." That made me feel really good. And then also, too, he said, you're having separation anxiety even at this age because of being kidnapped, and also, too, the other things that happened, combination of all of it. I'll probably take that to my grave. Well, I'm doing pretty good right now. I don't feel panicky at all, right? I'm happy about that. So what you have to understand is when kids don't get help, when you're first being abused, you absolutely develop all kinds of problems. You might end up in juvenile detention. You're out on the street, you're doing drugs, you're drinking too much. I hung out with kids who were doing heroin. I watched two kids die right in front of me. I had no feelings. I was numb. I would look in the mirror and I didn't know who the heck I was looking at. I didn't know what the heck I was. I had identity problems. I didn't know who I was. I just knew that these two people, these two clowns, had died right in front of me. And I'm standing there and I'm swinging my beer because I used to love beer. I still do. I mean, I won't have one, though. 1981. So, don't think I don't want one, though. Especially when it's hot in the summertime. Right, so. Okay. So I'm standing there and I'm drinking and I'm drinking and these kids, a couple of them died. And we took off. We just ran. Got into the vehicles. I always hung out with kids who were older than me. Started drinking when I was 13. By the time I was 16, I was a full-blown drunk. And the same thing was, you know, smoking cigarettes. I started smoking at a very early age. But with the school, what I did was I started taking flasks of booze at school. Because I found out that when I had to do my oral book reports, if I go, you know how to go around the room and you can kind of like know when your turn's coming up? I'd ask to go to the ladies' room long before my turn's coming up, and I'd take a couple swigs. By the time I got up there to do my oral book report, I did a fine job. Okay, so that's how I handled it. That's how I handled it. That's what I did. So, I ended up quitting school because I didn't like school. Didn't like it when I was little because I couldn't concentrate. Always thinking about getting molested when I got home. Didn't like it when I was older either. No one asked me, hey, how was school today, Carol? Did you have a good day? All the things that are normal, I never experienced. Well, when you're out on the street, you meet all different kinds of people. Some of them are runaways. I had a girl, a friend of mine, that took off. She went down to Newark. She was missing for 2 weeks. We thought for sure she was dead. They did find her, and she was all covered with track marks. They were pimping her out in the street. Because you see, this is going to blow your mind, and I want it to blow your mind, because this is the truth. We get our statistics from the CDC, the Justice Department, the FBI, missing and exploited children, and child help. The statistics that I have are not mine. This is what's given to us. I am a representative of NASCA. That stands for National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, which is what I am. Our website is www.naasca.org. I'm the co-host Monday through Friday on a talk show that we have. And the number there is 646-595-2118. You can call that number and you can listen. You learn about child abuse. And we have a wonderful website where we have all of this information that I'm just splitting to tell you about so that you can learn. Those of you who are going to be social workers, who are going to work in the field, okay? There's things that you have to learn about child abuse so you can be effective with your clients or your patients. It's imperative. If you go to a regular counselor, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that's bad, but when you have gone through what I've gone through in my life, and you can share that experience with people, and you have patients come into you or clients, whichever way you look at it, if you're not versed, if you don't understand child abuse and what it does to you, then you're not probably not going to be too effective. Okay? You're not going to help the kid, and they're not going to be able to tell you the truth, tell you their story. They have to feel comfortable with you. Now, I did get married. My first husband turned out to be like a father. Again, you would think that I would know better. Doesn't work that way. Women many times marry into the same type of situation. I became a mother. My husband, he'd get drunk. I was drinking anyway too, but I was really limiting my drinking because I had two children by him. And I adore my children. And I like to think that I became certainly a good mother, a loving mother. My children know that I adore them. Sometimes I'll say, "Ah!" Because I love my kids. And they're both successful adults, both of them. So I took my experience, and what I did was, I always said to myself, and you'll see that in my book, when I get older and I get married and I have kids, I'm never going to treat them like this. Ever, 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 ever. Because my mother couldn't have cared less. She told me to run away from home. I did try to commit suicide with a piece of glass on my wrist. And my mother was standing at my right shoulder and she said, "Do it and do it right." She wanted me to run away, and she wanted me to die. That's how much she hated me. I didn't ask to be born. What was I born for? I think the reason why I was born is to stand here and talk to these beautiful faces. That's one of the reasons. And to be on that talk show that I'm on, 5 nights a week, actually 6 nights a week. On Sundays, we have a different kind of show. Is to share with you the experiences of child abuse. I became, at one point in my life, all I thought about was committing suicide. I wanted to die, especially after my mother wanted me to die, too. I mean, if your own mother doesn't want you to live, what does it do to your brain? And then you marry into a husband who's beating you all the time, even beating you while I was pregnant. I just wanted to die. And I used to sit there and think of ways to do it. Okay, I tried it once. And a friend was living in the house. My mother didn't care if I had friends with us. We always had big houses. And I had long blonde hair at the time. So she came up to me. I'm on the bed cutting my wrist. She came up to me. And she pulled me by my long blonde hair. She says, "Let's get out of here." Well, as you see, you never forget these things in your life, ever. Stuff like this does not go away. You put it in a different part of your brain so you can function, so that you can get on with your life. But I always wonder, if I had been in a normal home, with normal parents, what kind of a life would I have had? I'm sure it would have been much better. So those of you that come from good homes, thank God, okay? Just know how lucky you are, because there's so many of us that don't come from good homes. And it breaks my heart when I see children on the street today, you know, who are hurting, who have been where I've been, who know what it's like to be raped, or maybe they're physically abused in their house in other ways. There's all kinds of abuse. You have sexual, physical, emotional, and neglect. And also, too, watching parents almost kill each other. This is all abuse. Now, what I'm asking for is a call to action. If you go into stores, you see the pink ribbons. That's for for breast cancer. You see the yellow ones for the troops. You see the purple ones for domestic violence. You see the multicolored ones for the gay rights. Do you see anything with the blue ribbon? No. There should be. There are 850,000 kids who are sexually abused every year. And the next year, there's another 850,000 kids that are sexually abused. These are the known cases, because 1 out of 10 only tell. That's disgusting, you're right. Now, according to the CDC, there's even more kids who are being beaten and suffer from neglect of all different kinds. We spend $124 billion a year, $124 billion a year for child abuse. And yet it keeps going on and on and on and on and on. One thing that's coming out with child abuse that isn't spoken about so much is boys. Boys can be abused too. You know, it's not just a girl thing, okay? It's a guy thing too. A pedophile doesn't care whether you're a girl or a guy unless he really has a preference. He just looks for the opportunity. I want to speak to you a little bit about grooming. Sandusky. Yeah, let's smile about Sandusky. Whoa! He's the tip of the iceberg! Remember, pedophiles go where children go. So Sandusky, he's not unique. He just got caught. People started to come forward. What I'm praying to God is that kids have the right to know that it's okay to tell. We need for children to come forward at the time of the abuse, even if it's in your family. I don't care if it's your mother. I don't care if it's your brother. I don't care if it's your father. I don't care if it's a cousin. I don't care who the heck it is. We need the school systems to get involved. I'll tell you how. Like if we had, for instance, you've heard of Erin Merrin? Has everyone heard of Erin Merrin? All right, Erin Merrin goes all over the country. She's a survivor. We had her on our show. And she's about 27 years old now. But she was abused by her cousin. And that was bad enough, but when the cousin started to abuse her sister, that's when she told, okay? And finally, she decided that she was going to go from state to state and talk about laws. How in our school system, we should teach about child abuse. We should teach about sexuality. Children have to learn to know about their bodies. And you start that at a very, very early age. God gave us all our body parts. He gave us our nose, our forehead, our mouth, our penis, our vagina. What the heck? Our knees, our feet. If parents are ashamed of saying our body parts, think about how kids are going to be. Teaching children stranger danger is good. They should know that. But teaching them about their body parts is a necessity. It's something that parents have to do as a better parent. We live in such a scary world. Don't be ashamed to sit down with your children. In fact, make it a part of parenting. Sit down with your children. Tell them about their bodies. You know, when you give your daughter or your son a bath, they'll say, Mommy, what's this? Mommy, what's that? Well, tell them what it is. When kids are old enough to ask questions, they're old enough to be told the truth. And that can happen at any age. All kids are different. But by saying to them, no one should touch you, no one has the right to touch you, and your bathing suit area is an easier way, a way that kids can really look at and understand. If someone's making you feel uncomfortable and they're trying to touch you in their bathing suit, in your bathing suit area, you tell Mommy and Daddy real quick, okay? Because that person is probably a pedophile, probably. And don't think that pedophiles have to be grown up, all right? Uh-huh, someone knows what I'm talking about. Someone's been doing their homework. It starts at the age of 15. By the time you're 15, you know you're different. You may not put that pedophile word on it, but by that time, you know that you like younger kids. Male people, don't you? You know. And you know you do. And then also, too, with the adults, if an adult comes over, say the guy down the street, and he's at a barbecue at your house, and he spends like half an hour with the adults and maybe 2 hours with the kid, watch him. Why is he spending 2 hours with the kids? He should be more interested in being with the adults. It's okay to give children attention. Don't get me wrong. But there's a limit for everything. If that person starts to, like, be nicer, say, to one kid than to another kid, that he's probably, or she, I don't want to say she, because it's going to be either or has already picked that person as their prey. And I don't mean P-O-I-E-Y. They're going to say to you, hey, let me take a kid out for pizza. You work really hard. Let me give you a break. Okay? That type of thing. I'll take your kid out. And you and your husband, go to the movies or something, or whatever. I'm here. I can help. This is what happens. This is how they start. Then they start maybe rubbing up against the kid, find fun. See, they want to see how far they can get. Maybe they'll accidentally, on purpose, rub up against them, okay, and do funny things. And if the kid allows for it, they'll go further. And then before you know it, because he's already grooming that person, then he's grooming that little kid, he's being nice, he's buying gifts, and he's treating that kid nice, they're sharing secrets together. Maybe he's treating that kid, or she's treating that kid better than mommy and daddy does. He has, or she has, a new friend. And, you know, so they start rubbing. Before you know it, he or she is sexually abusing that child. But don't tell. This is our secret. Now, you see what happens with kids is when they're told don't tell, most of the time they don't tell. Number one, they're scared. They figure they won't be believed, because after all, that's the nice guy down the street. Mommy and daddy like. Puts them in a bad position. Okay? Hey, you're just a snotty-nosed kid. Why would they believe you? Okay? Why should they believe you? I have a good job. I have a nice house. I have a nice car. I'm a nice person. Everybody loves me. This person is growing the community like Sandusky did, alright? Sandusky had how many kids that he sexually abused by the time they got all over with? Come on. It's ridiculous. All those kids didn't tell when they were little. And he kept going on and on and on and on, satisfying his disgusting ways. And yet, he was the pillar of society. He was the pillar of society. Just because a person is a teacher or a doctor or a minister or a priest or whatever, that doesn't make you a pillar of society. It's your action that makes you the pillar of society. If you're out there molesting kids, you're a piece of junk and you belong in jail. Any priest that touches a kid belongs in jail. It's as simple as that. You do the crime, you do the time. There should be no statute of limitations. You know why? Because what happens with kids, they're so scared to tell, they keep their mouths shut. But the crime has been done. Can't take the crime away. The mind of a pedophile is very close to the mind of a serial killer because of their behavior. Serial killers, they go out and they stalk people, they do all kinds of things, and they decide who they want to murder. When you are a rapist, when you are a pedophile, you murder that child's soul. You do. You make that child feel so bad that I can't even find words for it. And that's why there's so many kids that think about committing suicide. Why? Why did that kid commit suicide? That's another one of the things that they deal with. They commit suicide. I sure tried. Okay, now. What do I talk about? What am I going to cost you? A few things here. I'm trying to educate you, first of all, by David Pittman, Together We Heal. And on my website, on our website, on NASCA, www.nasca.org, we have all kinds of articles. This is how you can learn, okay? So, he says, start young. Talk openly and often with your children about sexual development. You see, the way to help stop pedophiles is to educate your children. That's how one way of fighting pedophiles. So you start at a very early age to teach them about abuse. Keep in mind that if you discuss sexual development with our children appropriately from a very early age, they will not be embarrassed to tell you about it if someone is trying to touch them. Okay, we covered that. Use proper terminology. Covered that too. Names of bodies. Practice. Take time to rehearse with your spouse. Now listen here. If you're married, or you're going to get married, or you're going to have children, there's nothing wrong with talking to your husband or to your wife about things that you're going to teach your children. Let them feel like, you know, the more people a kid has to go to, whether it be mommy or daddy, if they're good, you know, that makes them feel safe. They know that they can say anything they want to them, anything. Okay? And that's what kids need. They need to have that security. And in our schools, if the nurses and the counselors, even if it's just one each designated, all right? If kids who are being abused at home, they need someone to go to. All right, I had a drunk aunt. That worked out all right. But that doesn't always work, okay? They need to go and get the help that they need. So if the schools become involved with this, people, you're sitting there, you hear me speak, you're looking at someone who's almost been murdered twice. I've been sexually abused, I've been kidnapped and raped. I had an uncle, I had a sibling who was not nice either. So, I just learned something. I didn't have anybody. So you see, you're gonna turn the streets, you're gonna do all kinds of wacky things. Like I do. Alright, so talk to your husband or your wife about how you're going to present to your children about sexual abuse. Let them know that there's good people out there and there's bad people out there. And if they are touching you in the bathing suit area and stuff like that, or they're saying things to you, it can be verbal things too, okay? That let them know that they can come to mommy and daddy anytime. No secrets. Tell them there's no secrets. The only secret that's good is if it's somebody's birthday. And you don't want them to squeal and say what the birthday present is. You know, you're not sure with that. But when a pedophile has a kid, they'll say, this is our secret. Sex offenders. Pedophiles. Prepubescent, 13 and under pedophiles. Over 13, sex offenders. Okay. Yeah, this is one. Okay. Create a safety team. This is important. Help your child create a list of their trusted adults. This is a good thing to do. Give your child a copy of their list. Make sure that their support network people's phone numbers are on it. Once you and your child have made a list, let all the people on the child's list know that they are a part of the emergency team in case something bad happens and you're not available. Parents aren't always home, so kids have to know who to call. Let them choose who that person might be. Because you see, that means that they're feeling comfortable with that person or persons. And that's important. With the grooming process, it is almost like seduction. I hate to put it that way. But that's the way that it's worded. They seduce children. They look for the kid on the team. Oh, no, they don't want the quarterback. They want the water boy. They want the kid that walks with their head held down, who doesn't make eye contact. Someone who feels so badly about themselves that if some adult has given them some attention, they're going to thrive on it. And they know how to make a kid feel good about themselves. They know what they need just by talking to them. Be careful. These are things you have to learn. I want to read to you here. Okay. There are over 42 million survivors of sexual abuse in America. Somewhere between 2/3 and 90% of sexual abuse victims never tell. All right? 293,000 children and youth are estimated to be at risk of exploitation. 100,000 are prostituted annually. 2,000 kids go missing every single day. Hello? 1,500 of those 2,000 kids, usually between mommy and daddy, they're having a dispute. But the other 500, they're out on the street, or they're dead. Either way. 55% of the girls living on the street engage in prostitution. 20% of prostituted girls are transported across state lines for services. The average age of entry for girls into prostitution is between 12 and 14 years old. Now, with the internet, 1 in 7 children who are regular internet users receive sexual solicitation and solicitation online. 1 in 7. 1 in 3 is exposed to online sexual material. 1 in 25 meet with that person. We had a guest on our show. She met with the person that she met on the internet. She was 14 years old. And what happened with that little girl was she thought she was talking to a 17-year-old. He was 45. And what happened here? Okay, January 1st came, mother was having a party. And she, what she did, she met this guy outside the house. She thought she was meeting a 17-year-old man. He pulled her to the car. Took her across state lines. He already had a place to have. It was like a garage. And he was into torturing kids. So what he did was he tortured her for 4 days. Sexually, physically, not feeding her, and she was naked. Now this pedophile, see, pedophiles have their own name on the internet. This is scary. They talk back and forth to each other. They give each other information. They tell each other where to go. I don't mean where to go the other way. I'm talking about what state to go, where kids are available, and all this other stuff. Well, he was bragging to a friend online about having this girl chained in this garage for 4 days. You know what? It made that pedophile sick. He called the FBI. How often does that happen? That was unusual. You should go to our website because we have the archives and it has from 2011, 12, and 13, and you can listen to anything you want. It's free of charge where people tell their stories. That was her story. But that was shocking. You know, it made him sick. All right, I'm glad it made him sick. A report of child abuse is made every 10 seconds. That's good. I call the 1-800 for a child number. Now, when you suspect child abuse, you're not 100% sure, don't be bashful about it. He's someone's hero. Be a child's hero. You don't have to always be right. If you see a kid that has too many bruises, say, or maybe they're not dressed properly, like I said before, or they're walking with their eyes looking down, whatever the case might be, and you think maybe this kid isn't being treated properly, You call 1-800 for a child. And what they do is they send out their own team or team in your area. They know who to contact. You do not have to give your name. You can remain anonymous. And what these people do is they go in, they do assessment and evaluation, deciding what these kids might need or what this family might need. And you know what? If you were right, then you were that kid's hero. And good for you. See, that's one way of being proactive. And this is what I'm asking, we're all asking for society to become proactive. During the debates, did you hear anything about child abuse? I watch politics all the time. Nah, didn't want anything about child abuse. Yeah, you're laughing, you're right. I was laughing too, I was mad though. Because they should have been. They talked a little bit about education. Just a little bit. But then no one mentions child abuse, do they? Well, these are going to be the leaders of our country. They're our future. If we don't take care of our children right now, those are going to be the ones that are going to be leading our country later if they don't end up in the prison system. You think when a kid is being abused down the street that it doesn't really affect you? I worked in a juvenile detention center. The church saved me. I was out on the streets, I told you. I was doing bad things. And I saw too many bad things. And all of a sudden, I ended up in a church, and I had a prayer group. And those people believed in me. They said that I was not a piece of junk, that I was a person of worth. They got me involved with the Rahway Lifers program, Scared Straight. I was part of that program. I took a lot of kids through that program. It helped some, didn't help others. Because if you're too core, okay, if you're too core, if you're too hard, a lot of times it's not going to help. You've already been cursed at. You've already been smacked around. So those kids aren't really going to be helped, but there was a lot of kids that did help. Then I ended up working in a juvenile detention center. And you know what? We have antennas on our head. Those of us who have been abused, we have antennas. I can look out in this audience right now and I can see people who have been abused. I'm not going to say who you are. But I'm going to say it to you this way. That because we have our antennas and because we are so hyper-vigilant, I'm hyper-vigilant. You know, I'm looking over this way, I'm looking over that way. This is what happens when you're hyper-vigilant. Because you've been put in all different kinds of bad situations in your life, you become hyper-vigilant. Okay? So, when you become like that, when you become hyper-vigilant, you know the people who are being abused and what you have to do. And this is what I'm asking society, please. Don't just sit back. Learn about child abuse. So we can help. Alright, we need help. Our children are waiting. They're waiting for us. They're waiting for us because, you see, it's not a child's job. I still like me and mine. I'm a little different. I was always a tough kid. But most kids are not tough. You can become meek all of a sudden. Even if you're a bubbly kid, you'll turn into a meek kid. That's what usually happens. You change. So, okay, that 1-800 for a child number, that's one way of becoming proactive. Almost 5 kids a day die as a result of child abuse. It is estimated that between 60 to 85% of child fatalities due to maltreatment are not recorded as such on a death certificate. I like that. 90% of child sexual abuse victims know the perpetrator in some way. Actually, it's 93. That's changed. Over 60% of people in drug rehabilitation centers report being abused or neglected as a child. Well, this is true, because when I worked in juvie, my antennas went up, and I could tell which kids had been abused. And what I'd do is I would approach them very calmly. You always approach a kid calmly. You think he's being abused, and you want to know, you want to help him. You never act wild or you're like, You walk up to the kid and sit down and say, hey, how's it going? Okay. Have a bad day today? I am. You have a bad day too? There's ways of talking to kids. Make them feel comfortable with you, right? You can get a little bit of information from that child, enough to know that this kid needs help. Well, a lot of the kids that were in juvenile detention, they came from abusive backgrounds just like me. They got caught. I didn't. You know what happens with that? You don't really get help in juvie. If you don't get help from someone, then you end up in the big house, as they used to call it. You end up in regular prison. A lot of those people are going to be abused, of course. 31% of women in prison in the United States were abused as children. There you go, right there, it's right in front of you. 31%. I want to read to you the signs, and I want you to listen very clearly, of abuse. You have, for children, I go to daycare centers. I don't even let them know I'm coming. I just show up. I'm very sneaky. If Cindy, I'll hold you up information like you asked it. I'll talk to the intercom system, whatever I have to do. And I'll say, yes. And I'll say, well, I'm from the NASCA. I'm from the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Yes. I have information for you. I would like you to have this information to help you so that you can help kids. I said, no one knows all the answers. I don't. But what I do have, I'll share with you. And that gets my foot in the door. Now, for children, for little children, sleep disturbances, bedwetting, and or loss of fecal control. Maybe you have them potty trained and start doing that again. Regressive behavior. They start going backwards. That's sucking their thumb. Let them over that too, but they're going backwards. Impulsivity, you know, they become impulsive. They're distracted all the time. Difficulty in concentrating. Well, heck, I couldn't concentrate. All I could think about was that doorknob turning. Because that doorknob, when it's turning, I know God's on all that monster is going to come in. And he's going to do what you say. Refusal to be left alone. Kids who are little, they don't like being left alone. I mean, maybe they did it one time, but, you know, a little bit alone. Say, like, you're in a room. I'm not talking about totally alone. Is that what would be appropriate? Fear of an individual such as an alleged offender. Fear of people of specific type or gender. Maybe all of a sudden they're scared of women. Or maybe they're scared of guys. There's a reason for that. Even if they know. Right? Fire setting. Who would ever think that an 8-year-old would start fires? I saw it. Yeah. You would think that the older kids would do that. At least I would. 8 years old, thank you very much. I saw it. Cruelty to animals. Little children who are being abused are cruel to animals. That's a disgusting thing. Problems relating to peers. All of a sudden they become weird around their peers. They don't want to be around their friends. They don't know what to do with them. They might even go off into a corner, all right, rather than be with them. Sudden changes in behavior. All of a sudden, they went from being a good little girl or boy, and all of a sudden they're getting a little fresh there. Well, I'd be fresh too, and I was. Difficulties in school. Inappropriate interest. Now, this is interesting. I've seen it. Inappropriate interest in sexual things. This is little kids. I'm talking about kids that are under 13, well under. All right? They might rub up against the furniture. They might touch themselves. This is inappropriate behavior, right? Or they may even go over to another kid. And we're not talking about, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. I'm not talking about that stuff. They might start, you know, touching kids inappropriately. Yeah. That happened in my family. Yeah. And that kid was removed from that household. Eating disturbances. Now, this is with the older kids, the teenagers. We all know this. Overeating, bulimia, or anorexia, running away, substance abuse, self-destructive behavior, suicide attempts, self-mutilation, that occurs. They're going to cut themselves. That's what they're going to do. Incorrigibility. Those are the ones a lot of times that do end up in juvie, all right? The people don't know what the heck to do with them, so they end up in juvenile detention. Doesn't mean that they're bad kids. It means that their kids have been abused. I don't have one of those big hearts, pumping hearts, or whatever the heck they used to call it. No, I'm not like that. What I'm saying is, if social workers in juvenile detention would know the full background of a child and knew that they came from abusive backgrounds, whether they're being sexually abused or beaten up too much or whatever, then they might, you know, be able to help them better, wouldn't they? Right, you put them in juvenile detention, you're going to learn some other things. Things that they didn't know before. Doesn't always help. Alright. Criminal activity. There you go. They end up in juvenile detention or older, they end up in prison. Depression and social withdrawal. A kid is being abused as a teenager, even. Right? They will go to their rooms, they will stay in their rooms, they don't want to come out of their rooms. That might be their safety zone. Maybe that's the only place where they feel comfortable, is in their bedroom. Because you see, there might be someone in that household that's giving them a hard time. Hopefully they have a lock on the door. You're not supposed to have locks on your door, but in a case like that, I wouldn't blame them, all right? Social withdrawal, you have problems relating to their peers as well. Sudden changes in behavior. Hey, how you doing? All of a sudden, they're like this. Eyes down. Anger issues, you bet. In teenagers, if they're being abused, they get mad. They don't like it. No one should like it. No one likes it. I used to walk around my house. I was so mad. So many different people. I would clench my fist. Because there's so many people I wanted to punch. I wanted to hit them. I wanted them to hurt. Because I hurt, okay? I want you to hurt too. That's very normal, by the way. You should be mad. And again, of course, difficulty in school. You're not going to excel in school. You're too mad. So these are the signs, and there's more, but I'm not going to go into it, but there's more signs. You go on the site, www.nasca.org, and you can find all this. This is under the resources button. Those of you that are taking notes of your phones or whatever, the resources button has so much information on it. That's like my Bible, all right? Because it gives you not just child abuse, what to look for, but it has so many other things on that page. It just simply does, that it's good for parents. One of the things that are on that page is called a Kid Power Book. And that's by Irene Von Der Zande, Z-A-N-D-E, Zande. And what she does, she tells you how to work with your children, how to talk to them, you know, putting safety first, and so forth. The 5 steps from kidpower.org, kidpower.org. Protect children from being betrayed by someone they love and trust. That's a good one also. You know, they start with touchy-feely games, like I said, wrestling, tickling. Well, they're tickling inappropriate. See, they're trying to get your body. They're getting turned on by this, all right? They're tickling and touching you in all different kinds of ways. That's what pedophiles do. They end up doing more. So remember that. That's a good one. All right, talking to a child, and this is, if we're going to be proactive here, you have to learn how to talk to a child. You have to learn. Okay. So I'm going to go over this real quick. Okay. Talk to your child directly, or to a child. I'm going to say, if I say more it means to a child. Talk to your child directly. Pick your time and place carefully. Have this conversation somewhere that the child feels comfortable. Do not ask your child about child abuse in front of the person you think might be the abuser. Well, that'd be dumb. Why would you do that? Ask if anyone has been touching them in ways that don't feel okay or that makes them feel uncomfortable. Know that sexual abuse can feel good to a victim. Hey, out there, we all have body parts and we all have nerve endings. This is something that makes kids feel very, very, very guilty. If someone is messing around with their bodies and they're responding, well, your body's supposed to respond. And you see, that messes with a kid's head too, because they start feeling ashamed and all this other stuff, and embarrassed. Well, I must have wanted it. It feels good. You're either going to be that way, or you're going to be stone cold like me. Seems like there's nothing in the middle. Okay. Follow up on whatever made you concerned. If there is something your child said or did that made you concerned, ask about it. Ask in non-judgmental ways, and take care to avoid shaming your child as to ask questions. Make sure that your child knows that they are not in trouble. Again, they may feel like they're in trouble. They feel like they did something wrong. They didn't do anything wrong. They are never, ever, 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 ever the guilty party. Ever. They may ask the child to promise to keep it a secret. Wanting to talk to your child, talk about times that it's okay not to keep a secret, like we said, even if they made a promise. And build a trusting relationship with your child. Now that is so important. Bond with your children. If you're going to ask a kid whether your child or not, say it's your niece. And you think your niece has been touched? If you go to your niece and sit down quietly with your niece alone, and then you say to her, how are you doing today? Did anybody do anything to make you feel comfortable? Are you alright? That's a good way to approach it. You know how much I love you. You know how much I love you. Let her know that she's loved. And then let her know that she can come to you, just like my aunt. So these are ways of being proactive. Make the phone call, 1-800 for a child, and there are other numbers. I'm leaving information over there, buy my books. And they have them for Pennsylvania and for New Jersey and others. And also, too, again, 1-800 for a child, that's a national number. So being proactive means keeping your eyes open, your ears open. You see a kid, you think they're in trouble, make a phone call. You can remain anonymous. Pedophiles down. By talking to your children about their bodies, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and you can tell me, that slows pedophiles down. We can't stop it. It's a disease, it's pedophilia. But we can't slow it down. I want to make a dent in the statistics of child abuse. And the only way to do that is if we as a society start working together, start caring, keep our eyes open, keep our ears open, and become proactive by making that phone call. Now, are there any questions?
Shut you down, so we didn't find anything when we would.
Let me tell you something. Now, I'm not going to name names here of organizations that I think are good and bad, but I think we all know which ones we think are bad. But what I would do in a case like that, since you saw it and everything, and nothing, no action was taken, I would call the 1-800-4-CHILD number and tell them what you saw, and tell them who also you were in touch with, and they did nothing. That's what I would do. You keep working on it, and you'll be that child and children's hero.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Any more questions? Don't be bashful in anything I haven't seen or heard. Okay, that was easy. There you go.
What are some of your coping mechanisms?
My coping, my personal? Well, before I hurt my hip, I used to go out and run a lot. I was in a car accident, so that didn't do me very good. When I was a kid, what I used to do is I played a piano. I used to be in bands, and I used to sing a lot. That was actually my way of releasing. And also, too, when I was in school, and I did finish later on, and these places that I worked at sent me to school. But I would go out and run. Okay, I'd run, I would sing, and I would play the piano. That was my way of actually escaping, especially the running. And I was on the track team in high school for the amount of time I was there. I used to jump the hurdles. Okay, I was good. So anything that's like that is a good outlet. Okay, if you turn to alcohol and drugs, like I did a little later on, when I started drinking when I was 13, I was drinking when I was running, don't get me wrong. Because I was leading down the wrong path. But let's just say, generally speaking, something physical, whether it be running or singing, dancing, I don't care what it is, all right, that's helpful. It makes you feel better, it makes you feel good inside. Because when you've been so abused, you're already feeling so bad. So you need something to make you feel good, to give you joy. Any more questions? Oops, the light's a little bright.
How did you eventually get away from your husband?
My first husband. Okay. Whoa. Well, I went after him like several times. I would even go back. I wouldn't do that stupid stuff. And I had like two children to bring up. And even though I was in the social service field, so to say, because the church kept putting me in good places. I wasn't degree, but they were hiring me because of my experience. And then they sent me to school, okay? So finally, when I felt like I had enough to put down on a resume, unfortunately, my grandmother that I did get along with on my father's side passed away. And she left me $1,500, which was a lot of money back then. You could do a lot more back then than you can today. And then I took her. He's dead now, he just passed away, I found out, but I took off in 78, and I never saw him again. And Christmas time, birthdays, nothing to my children, not even how to do. Any more questions? Go ahead.
Did you ever have any difficulties with parenting because you didn't have that example from your mom or from your dad?
That's a good question. There are times I felt like swatting my kids, but I never did. No kid is perfect. But I would never do it because violence breeds violence. And I always knew that because I used to watch my uncles fight, kill each other, one starting, the other starting. I saw so much blood in my life. I could have had my own blood bank, okay? It was ridiculous. Yeah. So I know that violence breeds violence. That's not the way to do it. Okay. So I never hit my kids. Okay, well, is there any more questions?
What's your relationship like with your brother now?
Oh, man. Let me tell you something about my brother. He's down there in Florida, and he can stay down there. And I hope he's down there by the Everglades. Because he was mean to me too. He's not one of my abusers. And I haven't spoken to him since my stepfather died. Remember, I told you my mother remarried. And I haven't seen or heard from him since, well, it's been about 8 years now, 9 years. And I don't want to, because he was so sick. He called me up on the phone, and I always cringe when I hear him because I knew what he'd done to me. And he talked to me about, oh, look at that busty blonde walking down the street. What a sick pervert. Does I want to hear that? What a dope. Yeah. So I didn't want to hear that stuff. Anyway, I remember too much of what he'd done to me. I didn't want to see him anymore. Okay, so that figures that. Maybe the other guy's got money. Are there any more? Feel free, I'm right here. Do you have a question? Okay. Do you have a question? Okay. Okay, oh, you have a question. Hello, Donna.
I have a question, Kat.
Go ahead.
What can you tell them about family gatherings, say Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, where maybe people are not focused and on what could happen? Could you speak about that? What could happen in that setting?
You bet. Of course, I couldn't answer that in my own household because I was just so dysfunctional that we didn't have the right kind of family gathering.
Right.
But she read my book, so she knows. But anyway, the point is, when a kid is coming from a childhood or a family abuse, all right, what happens is, if the pedophile, I'm going to call them a pedophile, the male or female is there, that makes that child feel horrible. And what they do is they usually go to their room and say, you know, they're not a part of the functions. And if you do tell on that person and your family does not respond to you, then that kid's in trouble until that kid gets older and can get out of that situation. See, that's sad. People have got to learn. I don't care, like I said earlier, if it's mother, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, I don't care who it is. If they're a family member that's abusing you and are abusing your children, you get rid of that person. You do the crime, you do the time. I don't care who you are. Because you don't belong on the street. With my uncle, when I got out of that house, you know what he did? The house of horrors? He just moved on to the neighborhood, that's all. To the neighborhood girl, that's all. And then the neighborhood girl's father found out and pulverized him. Beat the heck out of him. He went down Florida too. Now, let me say something to you. If you take justice into your own hands, which we all feel like doing, okay, give someone a good whooping because they deserve it, it doesn't really stop them. It may stop them until they heal, they have bruises on my broken bones or whatever. But it doesn't stop that person. They belong in jail. This is why we can't become vigilantes, even though we feel like it. All right, you can't. You have to turn that person in, and hopefully the justice system will do its job and put them away for a nice long time. There are so many things that need to be taken care of. Statute of limitations should not be in any state. And another thing, because all our states are so different, they're so different, they have their own ways of doing things, people don't work together. This is bad. If you murder a person, you can go to jail for life. Well, I believe in Jessica's law. I'm going to tell you right now. It's not perfect. But if you rape a child, you belong in jail for life too. Because you ruined that kid's life. All right? It's as simple as that. I wouldn't have been out on the streets watching some kid ODing in front of me, standing there drinking my beer. I would have done things a lot differently. I know I would have. So you see, when you rape a child, you kill that child. It's almost like killing. It's almost like killing them. You kill her, their inside, their soul, their spirits, everything they have to feel with, you kill them. And you belong in jail. All right. I think this concludes. can help make a difference. All the people I talk to, write letters to your legislature. We need different laws. No statute of limitations. Now, in New Jersey, in 96, they did drop it for criminal, but they didn't do it for the other, for some, that type of thing. But other states all throughout the country have, unfortunately, statute of limitations. And remember, if the crime took place 10 years ago, it took place 10 years ago. Right? And then people should pay for it. So write letters. Don't be afraid to write letters. Get involved. Remember the signs to look for, like I said. Make those phone calls. This is being proactive. 1-800 for a child. It's easy enough to remember. Okay? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, guys.
On the phone.
Yeah.
That was good.
This is still recording, actually.
That was